ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ, मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. We had dealt with the preparatory stages of the Bhakti Yoga. Swami Vivekananda divided this Bhakti Yoga, or the path of devotion, the yoga of devotion, into two parts, the preparatory and the final. We had dealt in detail, greater detail, with the preparatory stages of devotion. One of the interesting features is that what makes life very pleasant experience, even if one be in this world, is the factor of love. Where this is absent, any amount of rituals or traditional way of interacting with each other. I am mentioning this because nowadays a great lot of training is given how to interact with people, especially customers, office colleagues. Improve your relationships, including there are marriage counselors are there. They give you the techniques of how to keep up the marriage. But if there is no love, that marriage is only a just dry sort of relationship. These are the preparations, certain rituals are there, certain preparations are there, certain sacrifices have to be made. If these are made, then life in this world also will be most pleasant experience. Love, as we have defined many times, is knowledge. Emotion is only an outcome. But most of us these days look for love in the form of emotion. And that is why we suffer severe disappointments. Emotion is all right. It is necessary, but that is not the primary part of love at all. So to briefly recollect what we had discussed or what Swami Vivekananda wanted us to understand. First of all, he defined what is bhakti, what is devotion. And his definition is a most marvelous definition. The highest, the most intensest form of love towards the highest. It has two parts. What best we can do on our part, intensest way we can express our whole being, but towards the highest, which is God, or which is reality. That is called bhakti. We do not lack bhakti. We already have it. But as I mentioned, there are two problems with that. One, it is scattered, divided towards infinite number of things. And second, it is directed only towards worldly objects. So if we can collect all this love and direct it towards God, and that is called devotion. In fact, in Sanskrit, we use a special terminology. All that we call love in English language, L-O-V-E, we do not use in Sanskrit. It is called lust, kama. Love or prema, that is the correct word, can be used only when we love God. Any love that is directed other than to God falls under the category of lust, kama. This is the first thing. Swami Vivekananda said, defined what is bhakti. Then he defined
bhakti towards the highest means towards God. And what is the nature of this God? Ishvara. We have many, many, many wrong understanding about God. Most often, we only use him as a machine, milking machine, to fulfill all our desires. Of course, as children, we have a right to do it. But as adults, we must know better than that. So he is what you call our innermost reality. So the question, why we should love God? Can I not live without loving God? Becomes meaningless when we understand that God is our innermost reality. When we love God, we are not loving anyone else. We are loving, in fact, our own selves, but our true selves, not the false self. Then, in each of the paths that lead one to God, there must be a teacher. Vedanta doesn't accept that self-taught path will not help us. We have to approach someone who knows what the person is talking about. A person who knows, who has realized the truth. In this case, one who loved God with all his being. We have shining examples of Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, Swami Vivekananda. So, when we can approach such a person, then we learn. Even in worldly affairs too, it is not possible to learn anything unless we approach a person who has knowledge of what we want to learn. Having approached such a person, we must have a specific type of attitude. The most important thing in any relationship, do you know what it is? The attitude. It is not how we behave. You can behave very roughly, very harshly, but if your attitude is all right, the other person also understands it all right. Otherwise, however wonderful words, sweet words you can use, but if there is no right attitude, then it is all in vain. Somehow we have become machines, dealing with too many machines. We have developed a mechanical attitude. If somebody comes and says, "Oh, how wonderful you are," even though we ourselves know that we are not wonderful, that we want to hear from others, and we don't believe them. Even when we do, when others say that also, we don't really believe them. Even though we don't believe, we still expect them to tell that words towards us. You know, just how an American had put it so beautifully about women. So I'm warning you, don't get offended. You see, even though the wardrobe is full of clothes, the women complain they have nothing to wear. Even though they have nothing to wear, they manage to dress up beautifully. Even though they manage to dress up beautifully, and they still complain that they are looking ugly. And even though they say they are looking ugly, they still expect them to compliment. And even when we compliment them, they don't believe us. So this is an age when, you know, everything is we are trained to be machines in work, in love, at home. And they just tell you, if you behave like this, everything will be all right. No. Mechanical behavior only makes a thing more machine-like, more efficient, wonderful, but it is lifeless. It doesn't bring any joy. How do we know that there is life? Because wherever there is life, there is tremendous joy. You can immediately understand. If there is no joy, that is one sure sign there is no life in it. Apply this test to any activity you want to apply. Are you reading a book? Is there any life in you? Or any life in the book? If there is, there will be joy. Are you eating food? If there is any life in you and in the food, there will be joy. Talk to somebody, is there any joy? Then there is life in both of you. Apply this test. Wherever there is life, there is joy. You know, Sanskrit is a wonderful language. The name for God is Sat Chit Ananda. Wherever there is Sat, there is Ananda. Wherever there is existence, life, there is Ananda is there. So, the point Swamiji makes is, only a person who knows how to love, and when we approach such a person, then only we understand what is love. Just imagine as an example, that supposing somebody is brought up with machines, no mother is there, no father is there, no brother, no sister to love them. The person will be kept alive, but he will be lifeless practically. He becomes a machine. We learn how to love from our mother especially, then father, our nearest and dearest. They bestow all that affection, and how much sacrifice is involved there. How much sacrifice parents make to bring up their children, we never understand. We do not know. We take it for granted. It is our divine right. When we become parents, we know how much sacrifice the parents make. The point is that these parents, they show their love by their sacrifice. Sometimes they may not be even happier with us, because if they can get angry, they can get annoyed. But that anger, that annoyance is also an expression of their love towards us. After all, they want us to be better people, that's all. So when an earnest aspirant, and he wants to reach God, to love God, he has to learn it from a loving person. And who is more loving than one's own guru? You know, this very peculiar concept we have, practically in every religion we have this, that the guru is not merely a teacher. You pay something and then he will give you something in return. The most important lesson we have to learn from the guru is how to love. But again, don't expect emotional response. As soon as you approach, his face blooms like a 1,000 petaled lotus. Not necessarily. He may even feel annoyed at your presence. But there is a deep love. Every guru wants his disciples to progress in every way, not only in spiritual way, even in material way, in every way. He wants the disciples to grow. Somehow this beautiful law operates in the relationship of the guru and the disciple, like the mother and the child. There is no other way we can learn. From the guru, we learn how to love God, and the guru is supposedly one who knows how to love God. And here is the beautiful psychological factor. If a person loves God, what do you think he will do, he or she will do, when others approach him? When you approach a fragrant flower, suppose there is a fragrant flower, and when you approach a fragrant flower, what do you think it will give you? Fragrance. When we approach a loving person, what do you think that loving person gives us? Love. It simply comes. But as I said, as I caution again and again, do not read emotional signs as an expression of love. It differs from person to person. Some persons are very grave. You go there and you greet them, they will just greet you. They won't talk much to you. And some of them are very effuse in their expression. We only understand this to read these signs of emotions, but we don't really understand how deep is their love. I mentioned briefly in my talks the incident of Swami Brahmananda, who sent away his beloved disciple to a far-off place as an expression of his love. Briefly, I will mention, you know, the last part of the story. Swami Brahmananda, he went to Madras. In those days, it was Madras. And he sent for this disciple, whom he sent away. And from morning, Every 5 minutes the Swami was asking, has he come? Has he arrived? Even though he was being told again and again that the disciple would be arriving only at about noon time. And at last the disciple arrived. As soon as this news was conveyed to him, Swami Brahmananda went and sat in his easy chair, grave like this. And the disciple came, prostrated, and Swami asked, how are you doing, my child? He said, fine. And the disciple also asked, how are you doing, Maharaj? He said, I am fine, you are also fine. Out. That was the end of the matter. And this was the Swami. From morning he was restless to see his disciple. The attendant who was watching this drama, he was surprised. And later on he asked, Maharaj, so why is it you didn't talk with your disciple for a long time? And he said, if I show my love to this person, he will burst. Instead of becoming free, he will become more attached to me. I found a wonderful light in this statement. Because you see, if we express our emotions, it will only bring on more trouble. Because you know, you will come again and again, at midnight also. My guru is waiting to hear my beautiful words. It is not the emotion. Deep inside, the prayer is going on. Let all the devotees be happy in every way. Of course, we pray for the welfare of everybody. We do not want anybody to suffer. Not even non-human beings. But especially we have special prayers for the devotees. We want them to go towards God. It is a joy to go to God, all of us together. But emotional expression differs from person to person. So that is why I am telling again and again, from the guru, somehow the idea comes that my guru knows how to love me. Even if the whole world abandons me, my guru knows how to love me. He is there for me all the time. And this is the truth. So, what are the characteristics or qualifications of a guru? What are the qualifications of the disciple? That was discussed. Then, Swamiji discusses a very important point, which is the guru imparts a mantra to the disciple. And the mantra is like a chain which takes the disciple gradually to where God is. It acts like a chain. Every repetition of the mantra is like holding on a link of the chain and slowly going forward. What is the significance of this mantra? And in Vedanta literature, the syllable Om is the very essence of all mantras. It is the essence of all Vedanta. It is the essence of every mantra in the whole world. And why is it so? Is it just a superstition? Is it a hyperbole? Or is there any fact behind it? And Swamiji explains it is a fact. Because the most generic syllable which covers all the ideas in this world is Om. And to just briefly recollect for those who have not heard it, and for those who heard it but forgotten about it. You see, all our ideas, deepest ideas, smallest ideas, biggest ideas, they are all in our mind. When we want to express our ideas, we use certain words. These words are conveyed by certain sounds. For example, here is a table. This object called a table is an idea in our mind. We all know what a table is. But if I want to convey that idea, so there is something on the table, then I have to say table. I have to utter the word table. That is a sound that goes into your ears. And it vibrates. And it brings about, connects to your idea. Exactly, you have many ideas. Here is a flower, here is chair, here is man, here is an animal, here is a table. But this word, as soon as you hear that word table, that sound connects itself, hooks itself as it were, with the idea table. Instantaneously, the table comes foremost to your mind. See the point? So every idea has a word, specific name, and every name has a specific sound. So in this world, for the same object, we have almost infinite number of names. In my language, the name of table is one. In your language, the name of the table is another. In Russian language, it is another. Every language, it is a different name. So we have how many names you can convey, but there is one. Is there any generic word which conveys all these sounds? Yes, there is one, which is Om. Why is it a generic? Because any sound that we utter has to vibrate from this voice box. You know, there is a voice box here. So that particular syllable, which takes advantage of the whole of this voice box, that would be the generalization of all the sounds in this world. And all the sounds in this world will cover all the names in this world, and all the names in this world cover all the ideas in this world, past as well as future. So what is that word which conveys the whole of this sound system? That is A, O, and Ma. Just as an experiment, here you see, whenever we utter some sound, this voice box vibrates. Have you noticed it? It vibrates. So you see, you put your finger here and say A, say A. Where from the A is coming? From the bottom of the voice box. And O, where is this O? It is exactly in the middle. And the last syllable is Ma. Ma, you see the lips touch. So right from the beginning of the voice box till the end of the voice box, that word which covers the whole of the voice box at the same time, that is the only word that we can say is Om. That is why Om, it represents all the ideas in the world. It means all the intelligence in the world. That means Chit. It represents Chit, God, which is God, pure consciousness. So that is why Swamiji explained what is this special sacredness of this particular word called Om. That is why he said it is the essence of all mantras. Then he also had explained what is the place of rituals. There are rituals. Every great religion or any religion that produced the greatest number of saints, realized souls, that religion, those saints were produced through rituals. Rituals are essential part of every religion. And that religion, which is dry,